Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. I'm joined by a big team of people here. This is going to be fun. I've got Cody. You're back, Cody.
I'm back. Good to have you back. Excited to be back. You guys have been doing this without me for a while. It's fun to hear some of those podcasts, but I'm excited to record another one with you guys.
Yeah, we missed you. Bo was terrible on it. He was really terrible. So we also have Bo with us today.
I'm right here.
No, we've got Bo Johnson with us again. Our guest host is here today. Bo, it's been fun having you. How's you doing?
I'm glad Cody's back.
Yeah, this is great. And we've got Tracy. So
there's going to
be four of us on the call. Matt and Karen are in studio helping us stay on track. But we're glad to be here all together. And Cody, let's get started.
The topic is success is messy.
I kind of liked success is a mess because it rhymed.
Oh, should have gone with that. Yep.
Yeah, success is a mess, but it's messy. So what we mean by this is what it sounds like. And that's just the very best companies, organizations, families, teams, entities of any kind, the very best are messy. And I've known that for 25 years, and it always keeps surprising me when I go into an organization that's fantastic at what they do, is how imperfect they are and how I constantly need to remind people of that. Because when we think the best means they're not messy, it causes problems. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I love that we're not burying the lead here, Pat. Like that, and in some ways, I feel like we tell ourselves this in our own company, in our own four walls to try to make us feel better. And then we realize, oh, wait, no, that's really true. Like sometimes I feel like we're like, okay, this is good. But then we go out, like you said, and we see these other companies that are super successful. And there's this perception from the outside that there's no way they're as messy as we are. And then we get in behind the doors and we're in their conference rooms and we see, boy, it's like this. This is actually a hallmark of success, is that it's not as linear and clean as you might imagine from the outside.
Right.
Yeah. When I first saw this topic, I thought that you were going to want to talk about that the process of becoming successful is messy, as in it's not a linear straight line from beginning to having arrived. But actually, like, that makes sense to a lot of people. And we've seen those images on LinkedIn of it's a squiggly line, it's not a straight line, and it's a journey, it's not just a destination. But then once you've gotten there, it continues to be messy. It's not like once you've arrived, now you plateau and everything's clean and easy. The process of maintaining success is just as messy as the process of getting there.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it'd be helpful for you to define what you mean by messy, because a lot of people don't really understand. We all know what messy means, but define it within the context of an organization.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that mistakes are made and things aren't perfect. And they don't know all the right answers, and they go through rough patches, and there's conflict, and it's just not, I liked how Cody, what'd you say, Cody? It's not linear, and what was the other word you used?
I couldn't remember. I wish you would have asked Tracy.
Baby brain. He has baby brain.
It's not all clean. It's not all clean and linear. And yet, when you're on the outside, and I think a great example is families. Every family has problems. Frankly, every family has big problems. I've not met one yet that doesn't. And then you hear about if it's a famous person, they talk about their family or the family in your church or down the street, and they all seem perfect. And you're like, oh man, they're perfect. And then you meet the parents one day and they're like, oh yeah, you wouldn't believe what's going on in our family.
Right.
And you, oh, so you too. There is no such thing as a clean, linear, perfect family. The best ones are messy, and the best companies are messy. And I was with a client recently, just a fabulous company that I just love. And it was amazing because I was surprised once again to see how messy they were. And it's wonderful messy, but it still is like, oh, well, if they're this good and they're messy, then I have to stop getting down on myself when we do things that aren't perfect.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you use the family metaphor there, Pat, because you know, we just had our third baby. She's 4 weeks old now. And there's these moments especially in the first couple of weeks where my wife has looked at me like, are you sure we can do this? You know, like, cause we feel like we're frazzled because of our other two kids and we're sleep deprived and all this stuff. And sometimes the reason I like this message around success is messy, because if you don't realize that that's happening behind the other closed doors of the businesses, you start to compare and feel like, oh, what we're doing is wrong. And one of the ways I tried to reassure my wife around our ability to parent these little lives is, oh, we're not going to be perfect. And hey, when there's other moms out there, we don't get to see the 2 a.m. oh, we're at our wit's end part of that parenting style. We get to see that on our own. And it's no different in businesses where, you know, like I love that you described it, Pat, as like a rough patch. When we're going through a rough patch, which we've had many of in our own company, you tend to think like, oh no, it's over. But really, this is just the natural progression of success in companies that embrace messiness and know that that is, you know, part of the hallmark of the path towards success.
Yeah, that's a great example. Bo, you had something to say.
Well, and the one of the themes I'm hearing here is that to be messy is human. And Pat, when we were in that room recently with the company, I was impressed by how human they are. That right. The messiness is their willingness to just be people. And so much of what you do in the room for them is help continue to encourage that humanness part. That don't try to cover up the parts of you that are human. Those are actually the parts that are going to lead to success, because they're the raw, vulnerable, interesting space in between everything that's sort of perfected. But the temptation is always to cover that part up.
Right. You know, it's interesting because we're all about organizational health. And so you think a healthy person is one that's ripped and they eat the right foods all the time. But even healthy people get sick. Mm-hmm. Even the healthiest person is going to indulge in a dessert here and there. It's not about being a robot. Mm. And we really need to talk about why this is such a problem. Why are we doing this podcast? It's because when we assume other organizations, other departments, other families, other teams are perfect, mm-hmm. we then strive for perfection, which is unattainable. And when we fail, we feel horrible guilt and shame, and we get discouraged. Or we don't even try, because we look at somebody else and we go, well, they're perfect. I already know I'm not. There's no hope for me. I might as well just give up. And these are mm-hmm. terrible things that happen when we assume that the best companies, the best families, the best organizations have it all figured out.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Pat, when there's a portion of this, like your methodology and the advantage, when we talk about a healthy organization, we lay out some questions, the six critical questions, and invite people, like you've said, that these are not as prescriptive as often people think. Like, it's not like this plan that here's step one and step two, step three. And so many people over the years that I've been here, like one of the requests that I find really funny that we get really relatively often is, hey, could you guys record one of the meetings that you're having? Because we want to see what like a really healthy, effective meeting looks like. And part of the reason we've never done that is because, one, there is no like prescriptive, here's exactly how you should run your meeting. But two, because if we recorded how messy it is, even though we have the parameters of what we, you know, like we're like trying to have a healthy conflict in that meeting, it's messy enough that it's not like there to replicate. You're not trying to replicate. Each organization is sort of uniquely messy. And I'm often in meetings like, thinking how comical it would be. It was like, oh, if we were recording this meeting and we made this public, people would think, oh my gosh, what are they doing? This has nothing to do with the Death by Meeting book or the way that you've laid out meetings. But it's uniquely messy of how we do that. It's not as prescriptive as I think some people think it is.
Yeah, the real reason we should do that is only to show people how ridiculously unlinear and unpredictable it is.
Totally.
You know, like, I love that, like you need to have a plan. You need to have the vertebrae of the meeting. You need to have a way to do things. And then you have to adjust and be messy. Like, I just love that Mike Tyson quote. A plan is great until you get punched in the face. Mm-hmm. Well, a meeting agenda is great until somebody says something and you're like, oh my gosh, we didn't plan for that. Let's wrestle with that. So it's always going to be messy. And people kind of are hoping things are going to be neat, tidy, and easily replicable. And life just isn't that way.
So, Pat, what's the difference between being messy and being sloppy?
That's it. Yeah, they don't call it messy Joe's. They call it sloppy Joe's, don't they? Actually, it probably should be messy Joe's. Sloppy would be you're not even trying. You know what sloppy would be? You don't even have a plan or a structure. And so when you do have a plan or a structure, then you deviate from it. That's messy. When you start without one in the first place, that's sloppy. It's careless. It's low standards. And that's a great question, because what people could hear this and go, hey, since all companies are messy, then we might as well just wing it.
Right.
No, even when you don't think you're winging it, you're going to have a mess. I mean, even when you think like we've got this planned, it's going to be messy, and that's okay. Hey, you know what I think is a good question is, what makes us so susceptible to assuming organizations, in this case, are perfect? You know, why? How did this happen? And I think it has to do with journalism and media and short attention spans, because I feel like when people write articles about companies, they simplify and they go, well, that company's great because they do this and this. And they need to make it wrap neatly and tidily, and they don't really get into the underlying things because they don't have enough time or word space to do that. So I think a lot of journalists want to make everything seem so simple. Does that make sense?
I wonder if another problem is the microwave social media 30-second attention span culture. That is, you only hold our attention on social media when you are confident and when things can be bite-sized, clean, portable. And so that's what ends up getting replicated. Whereas what is often more true is the thing that's a little more nuanced, perhaps a little bit more gray. And so lots of people are getting followers and attention with confidence, but it's actually the, like, the humanness in the midst of it that actually rings a lot more true with people, but harder to pay attention to. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if you're a journalist too, and you go sit down and talk to people, you're not even going to ask. They're like, I have a half hour to interview about why your company is doing so well. Right. They're not going to go, well, let me take you on a journey of how messy we are. They're going to say the positive things, highlight those. And so it's part of that process. I don't know if that built on what you were saying, Bo, but I do think that's a big part of it. You know, I think the humanity is hard to capture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're totally right, Pat. Like, success sells, you know, like, oh, hey, here, think about this, like, unicorn company, or against all odds, this company made it or became successful. And very, very few people, like, I love one of my favorite jokes that you tell when you're speaking sometimes is when you talk about why you named the book The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Because if you had named it like How to Have a Perfect Team, and you use this analogy of like, if you're walking through an airport and you see a book on how to have a perfect marriage, you're like, oh, well, screw that. That's nobody has a perfect marriage. I'm not going to read that thing. But if you write a book that says how to screw up your marriage forever in three easy steps, you're like, well, okay, I'm at least going to open up and look at the table of contents, you know? And, and I love that this is a kind of a, you know, a string of all of your methodology and the books that you write, is that we are trying to tease out that this is a messy process, that teams don't, it's, you know, in the motive you talk about, hey, it's some leaders are motivated by responsibility and some by reward. And sometimes you slip as a leader and it's not this bifurcated or like, you know,
binary
one or the binary one or the other. It's that teams and success and company culture kind of ebbs and flows, and you need to be aware of that so you don't make the judgment that you, or like the self-harm or the self-inflicting. Sorry, I'm reading what you're writing right here, so I'm rambling a little bit, but the point.
Absolutely. And you know, when I work with a new leader, like a new pastor or a new principal or a new CEO or a department head, and they haven't done it before, they go into it like, okay, so how do we do this so we never get upset at a meeting, we don't waste any time, and they set themselves up for nothing but abject failure. And I, as a parent, when we had our first children, we were like, oh, we want to be perfect parents, which is such a dangerous thing. I want to write a book called The Slightly Above Average Parent and say, aim for that, because I try, you know, every new parent tries to be perfect. And then they go through this horrible time of like, oh, I'm so bad. Mm-hmm. And you realize, no parent ever gets anywhere close to perfection.
I'm thinking about this time that we just spent with a team that was so fantastic, Pat. And I'm thinking about what I watched you do, which I think I told you, but it'll be interesting to hear you respond live, is you went in, and I think what an average consultant would do is go in and have all of the answers. And after about an hour and a half, you were like, wait a minute, I don't understand that thing. And they kind of explained it, and you're like, no, it still doesn't make sense to me. And it was about their meetings. And you just really leaned in to the thing that you didn't understand. And it felt sort of like zigging when everybody else is zagging. I think an average consultant, again, would be like, well, I'll just move on because I don't want to look dumb. But you actually entered into being kind of messy with them by leaning into what you didn't understand.
Yeah, I learned this as a consultant early on, that if I had to have the perfect session with a client or the perfect offsite, and I tried to, it was going to be miserable. And so now I realize that I want to have a plan, and they need to be messy when things deviate, and embrace that. And we try to teach that to our consultants in our, what we call naked consulting. If you're not saying stupid things or asking stupid questions, then you're probably not asking enough questions or following your nose. And well, I'm really good at that.
Speaking of, Bo, don't you have a question? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, what it did in the room when you were willing to go there is it opened up the rest of the room to be able to be a little bit messy. To say, yeah, right. I didn't really understand that either. And yeah, why do we do it that way? Or I've never really understood that. And it was a mess. I mean, when you throw all those cards back on the table to try to reassemble the house of cards, it's a mess at first, but it gave such interesting trust and permission in the room to be able to get in there and try to sort it out together.
You know, and so like, what advice would we give people listening to this? If you're a leader, embrace your messiness. And when things go off the rails, go, hey, look at that. I just went off the rails. And this is part of the process, you guys. And I'm not going to be too hard on myself. And I don't want you to be too hard on yourselves, because no organization avoids this. Mm. And as a parent, I remember I have talked to my kids at one point and said, because they'll be like, oh, I can't believe we just got an argument. And I'm like, you know, all kids get an argument with their parents sometimes. And they don't know, because when they go visit their friends, they don't argue in front of their friends. And right. So they go, well, I've never seen one of them do that. And I'm like, trust me. It happens in every family.
You know what? I think it's interesting, because I think the reason why we don't talk about messiness is because it's scary. Like, that concept is scary, and it requires vulnerability on the part of the person willing to enter into the messiness. So I think that's why it's not embraced as often as it should be.
What are we afraid? What are we scared of, Tracy?
We're scared of putting ourselves out there and being vulnerable and feeling exposed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And if people thinking that we're a failure.
Yes.
I love the advice you just gave the leader, because it sounds like it's so practical, which is, it's sort of like a real-time permission. When you're running a meeting or you're have a plan and you get punched in the mouth and things get messy, as the leader to say, hey guys, this is okay. Successful companies are messy like this. This is okay that this meeting isn't going as perfectly. Bo and I had a meeting literally yesterday where we spent 45 minutes on the phone with four of our team members. And at the end, this is how the meeting ended. One of the team members said, I can tell you both are irritated. Let's get off the call. And so we got off the call, you know, and it's like, but we got on the next day. We're like, hey, that's okay. That meeting did not go as well as we thought, but we did get some nuggets out of there, you know? So I love the real-time permission of the leader to say, hey, this is what it looks like behind closed doors of successful companies.
You know, yesterday at lunch, we were having kind of a meeting, four of us, and somebody on the team, it wasn't me, got mad. They got mad. And everybody else was like, that's okay. You're okay. It's okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I got mad. No, it's okay. Let's talk about that. And it was a really productive conversation. And I think we've had enough practice to realize, hey, getting upset is not a sign of failure. No. It's a sign of imperfection. And that's part of what great organizations do. So when we talk about conflict being necessary, That's part of messiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's really what we want to say is embrace messiness. Don't assume others aren't messy because it's putting you're going to make yourself feel like a failure or alone. And when you are being messy with your team or in your organization, celebrate it, call it out, give people permission to recognize it and to know that that is part of being a great organization or family or church or school. So that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed this. Go out there, be messy. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.